So our next speaker is Bernie Schisgall from UBC. He will speak on the inverse polynomial reconstruction method for two-dimensional image reconstruction.
Thank you very much. Now, let me explain. John asked me if he's seen me around this week, and the answer is no. And it's his fault. My research associate, Jae-Hun Jung, submitted an abstract for this meeting, and not having heard from the organizers, he presumed it wasn't accepted, and so he then planned a trip to Korea. So instead of him giving the paper, I am, and I'm leaving in about a week for a sabbatical, and I'm busy getting my house ready for the renters, so that's a little preamble here. I'm in the chemistry department here at UBC, and this came about somewhat by accident about a year ago. So I'm going to start off very slowly, and I think for you people this is going to be old hat, since I'm not a real practitioner in this area. I'm going to just briefly tell you again, an undergraduate exercise, what is Gibbs phenomenon. I'm going to describe a reconstruction procedure developed by David Gottlieb over the past 10 years, and then a new one that I came up with, which I call the inverse polynomial reconstruction method, and I'll explain to you where that acronym comes from. I'll show some very simple 1D benchmarks to show you how the method works, then some simple 2D applications, and then finish with the reconstruction of the Shep Logan image. If I have time, I will touch on some of the numerical aspects and some of the more mathematical aspects of this method, but we'll see how it goes. So let me keep my outline for me. I don't have to tell you, this is just an undergraduate exercise. Take some function, expand in a Fourier series. You get all these oscillations, so this is a step function, and that's what you get with n Fourier coefficients. It doesn't help, as you know, to add more because of the oscillations at the ends of the intervals and wherever these discontinuities are. Okay, so about a little over a year and a half ago, I was collaborating with a friend of mine at the University of Nice, and he's involved in large eddy simulations and using spectral methods, and his data is contaminated by all of this stuff. And I was there for 2 months, and he said, here's a nice problem. Help me get rid of this. I don't like it. So that's how it basically got started. Let me just give you a little rundown of what David Gottlieb's reconstruction method is. And the object here is, if you get a Fourier data set, can you reconstruct the original function? Okay, and this is how his method goes. We call it the direct method, and I'll explain in a minute the nomenclature. I'm going to make it very easy and just say I have an odd function, but this could be really generalized. This is the Fourier sine series of that function, and at the same time I can expand it in these Gegenbauer polynomials. The index is L, and there's a parameter lambda I'll explain, which is in the weight function. So this is the expansion of my function up to m terms. Very important, notice that's n Fourier coefficients here, and here I only have m terms in that sum. And these coefficients here are just obtained from orthogonality. You're projecting the fn, the Fourier series, onto the space of the Gegenbauer polynomials. And the weight function contains this parameter lambda, and the h is the normalization factor for those basis functions. What Gottlieb did was expand the sine basis functions that appear here into the Gegenbauer polynomials. So this would just be the projection now of the sine onto the Gegenbauer. And all you do is substitute this expansion into the first one up there. And what you get is a relationship between the Gegenbauer coefficients that appear in this sum and the Fourier coefficients with this matrix S. So if you give me a set of Fourier coefficients, B sub k, I do the sum, I get the Gegenbauer coefficients, and I sum this up, and that would be my reconstructed function. Now, it's not as easy as all that. A problem is how big should m be? If m gets very large, it gets to n, all I do is recover the original function with all the oscillations. So one has to keep m small enough, and that's clear, in order to recover the original function. And the other thing which is very complicated for me to explain, several papers and Gottlieb's papers in numerical analysis, is what is the value of the parameter lambda. So in his technique, the M and the lambda depend on N, and you have to watch it, okay? And let me just show you the problem that you can have if M gets too large. So here's, again, a very simple function. This is just X. F of X is equal to X. The oscillatory curve is the Fourier approximation with N modes. And here I've taken the M in the reconstruction in terms of Gegenbauer polynomials too large, and the symbols on the oscillated curve is the result. If you go too far, all you do is recover the original function you don't like. So that's a part of the problem, and here's the value of lambda, which again, as I say, is a little too involved, too technical to explain how that is chosen. Anyways, there I was in Nice, even though it's a very nice place, and I'm going back again. I was intrigued by this problem, and I just couldn't understand this role of lambda and M. And I thought about it, and I did something just a little different. I'm still expanding in Gegenbauer, but as I will explain in a minute, it doesn't matter what the basis set that I choose. It doesn't matter at all what the basis set is. Again, I'm just saying odd functions, but that doesn't matter. One can generalize it. And so what I'm now doing is making a correspondence between that expansion in Gegenbauer and the Fourier series. And now instead of projecting the sine onto the Gegenbauer, I'm projecting the Gegenbauer or any other basis set onto the sines. Okay? And so with the orthogonality of the Fourier sine basis functions, just multiply sine k pi x on both sides, do the integral, I get this result for my reconstruction. And let me put up the other one side by side, if I can get it on there. And you'll see the difference. So this is the what we call the direct method, because you have the matrix and multiply the Fourier coefficients to get the Gegenbauer coefficients. In this case, we called it an inverse method, because here the inhomogeneous term are the Fourier coefficients, and we have to invert that matrix to get the Gegenbauer coefficients. That matrix looks like this now, as opposed to S, which has the weight function from the Gegenbauer polynomials. What's incredible, what is really amazing about this, is that this method is exact if you give me a polynomial. So if you give me a function, which is a polynomial, if you give me the Fourier coefficients for a polynomial, I'll give you back that polynomial exactly. Okay? And moreover, it's independent of the basis set. I didn't have to use Gegenbauer. I could use Legendre. I could use any set of polynomials. I could use the primitive basis set, x, x squared, x to the fourth, and so on, cubed, so on. So that's really amazing that there's no dependence on the parameter lambda. And the same is true with the parameter m. So, for example, if you give me x, all I need is b1, the first Fourier coefficient, to reproduce the function exactly. If you give me x cubed, all I need is 2. And so on. Okay, so it's exact for polynomials. And so let me show you some benchmark calculations. So these are all 1D. I'll go to 2D in a moment, just to show you how the method works. Here's a function, not quite periodic, almost periodic, but not quite periodic. What I'm plotting here is the L infinity error as a function of the number of terms, m, in the expansion in Gegenbauer. But you could think this is a power series if you want to. It's equivalent. So there's the L infinity error coming down to almost machine accuracy with about 24 modes for this function. And then we also define a residue. We have to determine where to cut the series off in m. And so this is a residue following the L infinity error, and then they start going up. And I'll show you a little bit more of that when round-off error takes over. Here's a polynomial, x cubed plus x to the sixth, exact to machine accuracy with six terms. So there's the error. We don't have quite enough, and then it just converges dramatically, and it stays down there at machine accuracy. So it's exact for polynomials. A comparison of this new, we call it an inverse method because we're inverting that matrix. And the previous one we call direct because there's no inversion. Although, in fact, the round-off error in the direct method is worse than in the inverse one. So here's that same function again, cosine 1.4 pi x plus 1. The inverse polynomial reconstruction method is A. That's again the log of the L infinity error. It's spectral. It's converging really, really rapidly. And that's the other direct method. Also spectral, but it's certainly slower. We could do it in two domains. Here's an example of a function in two domains. On the left, we have a linear function, minus 1 minus x. On the right, we have a power, 1 minus x to the sixth. The oscillatory curve is the Fourier approximation, and I don't know how many modes, but not too many. And we can reconstruct this function exactly from the global Fourier representation. So this is the Fourier representation over the whole domain, and we can extract the solid line as the exact function, and the on both sides is an exact function. A very small number of polynomials. So the method is adaptable to multi-domains. And I have another example, which is even more domains. It comes from a shock problem. It's known as Sod's shock problem. I won't get involved in the physics, but it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 domains. In this case, it's not a Fourier representation we're starting with, but a Chebyshev. That's these oscillatory curves. The exact function is the solid line, and the reconstructed one is the one with the solid symbols. So we could do this with quite a number of domains. So that doesn't limit us at all. And the size of the matrices is extremely, extremely small. Okay, where am I? So that's about it for the 1D applications. Give me any Fourier data set for a polynomial, and I give it back to you exactly. If it's not a polynomial, the accuracy will depend on how fast the Taylor series expansion converges. Okay, so let me go on now to things that might interest you a lot more, are these 2D applications. And again, we have a number of benchmarks. This is a Fourier image of a step function in 4 quadrants. So just chosen arbitrarily, these have different amplitudes. The intensity gives you the amplitude. And I didn't write down how many Fourier modes. I would guess, I don't know. So that's the image. Where does it say? N equal 12, thank you very much. So there's 12 modes in each direction, okay? And that's the picture you get. Again, because we only have, this is a constant function in each quadrant, if I think of each one separately, I only need one term, if I'm thinking of a polynomial, to fit this function, and that's indeed the case. So we can reconstruct that fuzzy image exactly. It says mx equal my equals 0, but that's the first term in the polynomial representation in each quadrant. So you could see it works just as well in a multi-domain 2D environment. Here's another benchmark testing it out. This oscillatory function here in x and y. This is the Fourier image with n x and y equal to 16. As I said, if the function could be represented as a power series with very few terms, we don't need many terms to invert it to represent the image. So here it is cleaned up. And it says there mx is equal to my is equal to 32. So again, it's 32 polynomials in each direction. Okay, I think we do have some error estimates, and it's almost machine accuracy. It's very, very close to machine accuracy. And finally, the Shep-Logan image. Fourier image here, it doesn't come out very clearly. You have to look at it on the transparency. nx equal ny equal the 128th. And here I don't think projecting this is going to do it justice. Think the same number of polynomials. Can you see? Can you see it at all or not at all? Or is it visible? It's not very good. But this is the clean one, and this is the one with the fuzziness to it. I should mention that here, I think, one scans in each direction separately. Okay, let me go back just a little bit and discuss some of the mathematical aspects again. And it's easier in 1D than in more complicated situations, but it's the same story again. Again, it's this function I've shown you before, almost periodic, not quite periodic. And there's a little, these graphs are a little busy, so let me explain. So it's this function on the left. And this line, this is the L max, L infinity error is a function of number of basis functions. In this case, these are Chebyshev polynomials. So what this curve is showing you is the actual convergence of that function if you just expand it in Chebyshev polynomials. And it is spectral. It's coming down very, very fast to essentially machine accuracy down here. This curve here on the top is basically the Taylor series expansion of that same function. And the error is a function of the number of monomials you choose in that Taylor series expansion. And the other curves is the reconstruction with this inverse polynomial reconstruction method. C, I have to read myself what it says. This is these are the crosses, the cross. Again, Chebyshev polynomials are used. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what you use. You get the same results. And so this is when you use Chebyshev polynomials. So there's the error for the reconstructed function. And this is the error for the primitive basis. If you just use the primitive basis, and this is what you get. You see it goes, there is some round-off error going up, and I'll explain that in a moment. But until here, it's about the same. This right panel is a little busy. There's a lot going on there. And let me just say that there's a multitude of curves here, all of which give exactly the same result here for different basis functions. And the object here is to show that it is basis set independent for this function here. It's not quite the same one. It's an exponential function. So again, we don't quite get to machine accuracy, but it's pretty good, down to about 10 to the minus 9 or 10 to the minus 10 for the logarithm of the L infinity error. And then there is some errors creeping in because we're inverting a matrix. And the issue there is that the condition number of that matrix that we're inverted is growing. And so here's a picture, again, a log of the condition number of the matrix as a function of the size of these matrices that we have to invert, again, for different basis sets, Chebyshev, Legendre, and Gegenbauer with different values for this lambda parameter plus the primitive basis set. Now, I won't go into the details of how they differ. You just get the idea that the condition number is indeed increasing quite quickly with the size of the matrix. And it does vary a little bit depending on what the basis set that you use. So this is something we are looking at in some detail. Again, this is the same thing again. These are 1D benchmark problems, three different functions, f of x equal to x, exact, remember, if just one Fourier coefficient, and these two others that we've used in some of the other transparencies. Again, this is the log infinity error as a function of the number of basis functions. X converges at 1, and then error starts creeping in as the size of the matrix goes up. For the next function, F2, there's the error going down, and then it starts going up again. For the next one, it goes down slower. And then it all seems to lie on the same graph. In this case, this is the IPRM with 16 significant figures, and then we increased it to quadruple precision to 32, and we do get a dramatic improvement This is now down to 10 to the minus 20, more than you ever really care to have. X is not shown there because it converges in one term. This is the cosine function. This is the exponential function. On the right-hand side is the direct method. You see how poorly it does with this exponential function here. There's almost no real reconstruction there. Better with the other two. What's surprising is there's no huge improvement when you go to quadruple precision to avoid the ill-posedness of that matrix that we're inverting. So I told Gunther all I needed was a half an hour, and I think I've done it. A picture here that my colleague, we've been trying to come up with a little naive diagram of these two methods, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this. It keeps evolving as we write this paper. But just to give a schematic of what this method is, this is the Gegenbauer or polynomial basis drawn as this arrow here. This is Fourier. There's our function f of x. And that's the projection of f onto the Fourier basis, which we call fn of x. And this is the projection onto the Gegenbauer, which we call fm of x. And then we have two errors. And here I'm a bit of a loss to remember how this goes. But this is the error e2 in our IPRM method. Which lies along the Fourier space, which could be made exact. In the direct method, this is where the error lies, and there's no way to make it exact. So this is a picture. It's going to evolve. I'm not sure that this is the final form. Giving some idea of why this method is in fact for polynomials exact. Thank you very much. Well, we know there's no edge detection at all here at all. Okay. So for the moment, we haven't dealt with that problem at all.
So okay. you have a priori information. You just build in your prior knowledge of the object. And okay.
One step at a time.
No.
Yeah. No. Just.
It's a bit of a miracle if you didn't.
I'll do different error norms. Say the L2 error in your
example. The L2 error isn't good at all. It really isn't. The L infinity is very important, really, because the L2 is just an average over the whole thing, and so we've stuck with L infinity.
Understand correctly your method. So you have an object, a function, given as a sine expansion.
Or given as a Fourier data best set, yeah.
And you develop from that Fourier data, you develop a polynomial fit to it.
You could say that,
and then,
but it's not. I wouldn't call it a fit, okay?
Or
representation, yeah.
And what you say is that if the function is originally polynomial, you'll get an exact representation. So that by itself is perhaps not surprising that a polynomial can be well represented by polynomials.
Right, but that's the basic idea, right?
So the only thing that, I guess, the point you're making here is that if you're not giving the polynomial representation, instead you're given a Fourier representation, you can still recover the polynomial.
Right.
So if many functions are not polynomials, at least
sure.
The log-on phantom.
No, right.
So why is this an interesting problem? What are the natural situations where you start with the Fourier representation and you want to get?
Well, what I would ask you to do is send me some nice test problems to see how it will work out. I mean, we've been at this since September, mm-hmm. Okay, and I think we've done remarkably well with it. I mean, any method for which you do have a set of functions for which is exact is fine. I mean, the direct method that David Gottlieb has developed, it's not exact mm-hmm. for polynomials, so you're better off. And as I've mentioned, if in 1D, if the polynomial does converge rapidly, you could be assured of a very good reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. Because given so, any function you can develop a Chebyshev optimal approximation in polynomials, if you want.
Right.
Which could not be beaten.
Right. Right. Well, here, as I say, it's basis independent. It's a little hard to see that it's basis set independent. But if you sit down and just use a polynomial, you'll see immediately, you know, what's inherent in the fact that it is exact for a polynomial. It's nothing complicated. It's just very obvious.
Okay.
Nothing. And it's basis set independent, so it doesn't depend on Chebyshev or Lejeune. Because the Gegenbauer for lambda equal to zero, that's Chebyshev, for lambda equal to a half, it's Legendre. So they're contained in it. Okay.
Right. If an electric engineer wants to get rid of the Ibbs phenomenon, he just uses an appetizing filter.
Yeah, he uses a filter, right.
Why? What's
Well, this is better than using a filter because I get the original function. Well, again, I'm back to polynomials, but I get the original function back again. If you want, it is kind of a filter, but I haven't been able to put it in that language. But there, all you're doing is killing the higher modes in the Fourier series or whatever. You're massaging you're massaging your data, right? You're playing with the data. I'm actually not playing with the data in that sense. Okay. I'm taking the data and reconstructing the function. And you can see now, in those cases, I mean, the answer to some of these questions is that regardless of what method you develop, there's always going to be a situation where it won't work, right? I suppose this is... you can always find situations, I mean, where it won't work. So... as I've shown you, I was looking for the other graph, but here's an example of this function. It comes down there, we get to 10 to the minus 9, and then the round-off error takes over. Here we get down to almost machine accuracy with 20, and then here it is, then the round-off error takes over. I've been asking to kill it as much as possible. What function would sort of really barely converge? And that's your point. I'm sure I can find one, but... You know, the other question too is, even if you find one, then the other point one should pose is, how often are you going to run into something pathological? So I could find something where the results won't be good.
So back to the original problem. So have you now applied this to the fluids calculations?
No, not yet. No. No, but I mean that's been, you know, I'm coming from an area where I use a lot of spectral methods, and so those oscillations are the thing that are always in the way, and typically people use filters, right? And so here that's how I got started, and the idea was to, could we do something, and it's looked at as a post-processing type of technique, you know, once you get the data. The interest would be now to build this into the actual method for solving the PDEs and not as a post-processor, but we haven't done anything.
Okay. Thanks again.